Hello and welcome to Horror Movie Yearbook. I am one of your hosts, Willie Gibbs, and with me is...
Tim Long.
My wonderful co-host. How are you doing, Tim?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking. It's been an exciting week. Thanksgiving's coming up.
It is.
Turkey Day.
Turkey Day.
You excited for that?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I like to eat.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of food.
You got a favorite Thanksgiving horror movie? The trailer for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, that's my favorite.
Me too.
Yeah, but Thanksgiving is an under-penetrated, like, holiday for horror, right?
Right. I can't believe nobody's made a... Ooh, I'm not going to say it, because maybe I'll write it.
Yeah, maybe you should.
I can't believe nobody's made a Black Friday horror movie.
Yeah, how has that not happened?
Right?
Yeah, let's get on
I
that.
I mean, I guess you could call Dawn of the Dead that, but...
And you could just call it Black Friday.
Yeah.
Like, that's a horror title.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Anyway, we are Horror Movie Yearbook, and what we do here is we
don't steal that idea.
Yeah, don't do that.
Nice. That's mine. I copyrighted it.
That's clearly it's gold.
Yeah.
Right? It writes itself.
Sorry, Willie.
No, you're fine. I understand. That's your version of copywriting. Don't steal my idea.
Don't steal my idea. This is copyrighted.
Hey, internet. what we do is we pick a year, a random year, and we talk about three horror movies that were made in that year. We do have a few episodes in the can already, so please, by all means, go check those out. You can find them on iTunes under Horror Movie Yearbook. You can also find them on our website at horrormovieyearbook.com. We will be covering some of our feedback coming up here in a second. And if you'd like to be featured on our feedback section at the top of the episode, by all means, please send us feedback. We're on Twitter at HM Yearbook. We are on Facebook at Horror Movie Yearbook. And you can also shoot us an email. horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. Any of those ways are great ways to get a hold of us, so please feel free to send in feedback, good, bad, anything in between, ideas you have. Maybe there's a year you want us to cover. We've already done that before. We've done that once before with 2009, which was our last episode, mm-hmm. And I thought it was a lot of fun. It
worked out pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of 2009, we did have a little piece of feedback that I wanted to bring up here. This is from Sean on Twitter. He says, two of these three movies are so great. I still look forward to hearing what you have to say about The Collector, though. I love it.
Not a fan.
How catty.
I know.
Get it, Sean.
Yeah.
Get it, Sean. Well, I hope you enjoyed the episode. I for one, enjoyed all three movies.
Me too. There hasn't been a movie I've disliked yet.
No, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly different degrees of liking.
This week might have been the closest.
Okay. This is going to be interesting. I like this. Another little piece of feedback we got in between... last episode in this one, from Harry on Twitter. He mentioned that he's already listening to us. He had been chatting back and forth with our parent show, Midwest Film Nerds, mm-hmm. that we worked on together, and they mentioned to listen to us. So thank you, Alex, mm-hmm. for promoting us, and thank you, Harry, for listening to us. We really appreciate that.
Thank you, Bo.
Now, on to what we have on the docket for today. We posed the question on Twitter and Facebook, what is your favorite horror film from 1976, which is, of course, the year we're going to be covering tonight. And we got a lot of responses. So I'm gonna knock these out fast and furious, like Vin Diesel,
yeah,
or Paul Walker. And no, we're more like Tyrese and Ludacris over
here. Yeah, one of them might have been born in 76.
Maybe.
I'm not doing the research. To
yeah,
out, no.
But. Somebody, yeah, shoot us some feedback and let us know. So let's get through it. Steve Ching on Facebook says that it turns out the only horror movies he had seen that year were Carrie and The Omen. He said, so based on that, I'd have to go with Carrie. Unless you count Assault on Precinct 13 as a horror film, which Google does, then that's my choice. All wonderful choices, I think.
Yes, and I count Assault on Precinct 13 as a horror movie.
I would agree. What's weird is...
A child gets... Spoilers. A child gets shot at the first.
Brutally shot in the face, right?
Isn't it in the chest?
No, it's in the chest. That's right.
Through the ice cream.
Yeah, because it's kind of a goofy squib moment, and I love it.
Yep.
It's super mean. You know what? That's one of those ones where it's so borders between action and horror for me.
Yeah.
And I feel like if Carpenter hadn't directed it, I don't think people would think of it as a horror movie when they think of it. I mean, it's horrifying. But I think we're going to have to come back and cover that one at some point.
Yeah.
That's kind of that's a movie that certainly received more love recently than it did for a long time. But I think it deserves even more than it. Like that.
It's got the best. It's got maybe his best theme.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I made sure to learn to play on keyboard. which is not very hard, by the way.
No, it's not.
Everybody should learn it.
And it's so annoying after the movie when it's stuck in your head for 3 days.
Yeah, but it's so good. Adrian on Twitter said that his favorite was The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
It is sweet.
Also a cool movie. Patrick says, the answer's Carrie. Obviously, right? It has to be Carrie. We might agree with you. We'll see. Because Carrie's being covered tonight. So we'll see if we feel the same way. Aphrodite mm-hmm. on Twitter said Helter Skelter, which it's a cool choice, right?
I would agree with that.
I really dug that. Yeah, I really dug that. Another one that I don't think you would, if you thought horror films, you wouldn't necessarily jump right to a Helter Skelter, but it's a horror film, very much so. Yeah, I really dig that. Paul on Twitter says, Carrie, God Told Me To, House with Laughing Windows, People Who Own the Dark, and Who Can Kill a Child.
There's some cool ones in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good list. A couple I haven't seen, so. I wanted to if I had, I just didn't have time this week, and I'll probably go back and, but I wanted to catch some of those that he listed off there.
Yeah.
Because there's a couple I have not seen on there.
Which ones have you not seen? I'm wondering if they're similar to me.
Name them off. I believe I've seen
Carrie, obviously.
Yeah, I believe I've seen Who Can Kill a Child.
Yes, I've seen that one.
But I have not seen, was it God Told Me To on
God
there?
Told Me To.
I've not seen God
Larry
Told
Cohen.
Me To. Larry Cohen. Oh, is that Larry Cohen?
Yeah.
Oh, then I really want to watch that.
Yep. And then House with Laughing Windows I have not seen.
I've not seen that either.
People Who Own the Dark I think I have.
Okay.
But it's been a long time. So I'll be revisiting some of these, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Paul. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's one good thing about feedback is we get to hear a lot of, maybe a lot of movies that recommended that we haven't seen.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And I'm always, horror fans know this. People are always looking for new stuff.
We need to stick up for each other and help each other out here. The Real Queen of Horror on Twitter.
Yep.
Wonderful handle. Mm-hmm. Had a little list of her own. Alice, Sweet Alice.
That is, I've seen that. That's good.
It's pretty sweet, yeah. No pun intended. JD's Revenge, which I've not seen.
Not seen that.
And Burnt Offerings.
Ooh.
Which we're going to be talking about tonight. So,
yes, we are.
Yeah. Very exciting. Got another list here. This is from Jamie on Twitter. Who Can Kill a Child? God Told Me To. The Signalman, which I have never even heard of. Hmm. Maybe that makes me a horrible horror fan. I don't know. But I have not seen or heard
Let's
of that one.
Check it out.
House with Laughing Windows and Carrie. So I would say that Jamie and Paul are like best friends, and they don't even know it because they have very similar taste. David on Twitter says, he actually asked, does Taxi Driver count, otherwise Carrie? Taxi Driver, if we're going to argue the fact that Assault is a horror film, Taxi Driver is. So you know what? Yeah, that's a great choice. It's kind of an out-of-the-box thinking, and I dig that.
Oh, The Signalman. I just want to...
Sure,
from what I've...
Break it down.
From what I found on Wikipedia, it's based on a Dickens
Oh, cool.
story. A short Very story cool. by Dickens. It was a BBC television movie. So that probably explains why I haven't seen it.
Yeah, because as Americans, our exposure to BBC, like our wide exposure to it, really has only taken place in the last, 10 years?
Right.
Yeah. It was harder to get a hold of that stuff before, so... Phantom Tech says he would have to give it to Carrie. At Flix King says he's going with The Omen.
Okay.
And then Eric on Twitter says Carrie. So lots of love for Carrie.
Yep.
Lots of love for The Omen. Quite a bit of love for Town That Dreaded Sundown, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so interesting. Very interesting.
I think that shakes out about right. I mean,
yeah, those two are definitely, there's a reason why we're talking about those two. I mean, it makes sense. So, anyway, please, by all means, we'll be giving you all the access or all the avenues to which you can send us feedback at the end of the show again. So, we love to hear from you guys. It's a lot of fun. Just being able to interact with you guys on Twitter has been a blast. So, keep it up. It's awesome. Tim.
Yo.
I think we need to hop in that time machine of ours.
Are we ready?
I think we're ready. We're going. We've never been this far before.
I'm -8.
Yeah, I am -10. Yep.
Double digits.
Yep.
76.
I'm trying to think, what would I have been doing in 76? I probably would have been angry.
I would have been in high school, right?
You would have been in...
Is that what age we've decided around when we're...
Yeah, I think, let's say we're like senior year of high school, right?
Right.
I feel like I would have been kind of angry at the world.
Yeah.
I feel like I would want one of those like angry youth, like, I'm not trusting the system very much.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're coming out of, in 76, we're still dealing with quite a bit of recession. I think the recession really hits in, what, 77 was when things really started?
It's in the middle of the Carter years.
We're close to it. I think there's, I mean, obviously we're post-Vietnam, so I think there's still a lot of mistrust of the system and government going on.
Yeah,
I feel
Gerald
like I would've
Ford
been
is the president at this point, right?
I believe
Ford,
so,
Ford,
yes.
And then Carter was elected to kind of get away from the Ford-Nixon stuff.
Yes, debacle.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting time period. I feel like I would have been one of those, like, I might have been one of those protesters, man. Not like one of those, like stick a flower in the tank.
In the gun, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking through here, trying to figure out what I'd be doing. I'd be up in old northern Michigan. I'd be cheering for probably still the Lakers at this point.
Okay.
I think the Lakers. Let's see. This is pre Magic Johnson though, so maybe not. Because Magic Johnson is when I jumped on the Lakers.
That was what, early 80s?
Yeah. It is 79, 80. Because Michigan State won the national championship in 79. So yeah, I would have been a Lakers fan probably, or Pistons, probably Lakers Pistons. Listening to Elton John for sure.
Yeah,
I love Elton John.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know, probably just hanging out in my car.
Yeah.
Cruising around. I probably would have been
chicks.
Yeah, probably very similar to what old Johnny T is doing in Carrie, which is cruising around in the car.
With a sixer
with
in
a
your
sixer,
backseat.
Watching out for the fuzz.
Yeah.
The pigs. I would be killing pigs with a sledgehammer.
Jeez. Oh, man.
Just because, I mean, if you're going to go all in the 70s.
Well, there was not as much to do back then, so I don't know. All right. Anyway, so let's hop in.
My dad had a big afro at this time.
Did he really?
Yeah. My dad graduated high school in 79.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, giant.
That's
giant
awesome.
Afro. And I did in high school.
I was
going
to say,
well,
you had a fro at one point,
yeah,
too.
I didn't, yeah, I did. We both have curly hair, so I probably would have a big afro, too, and sideburns.
Dude, you would have been so cool.
I would have been awesome.
I would have been an maybe annoying little kid that would have been like following you. Like, can I come with you guys?
And you were the 70s were my time. I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Elton John. Oh, I would have loved Jimmy Carter. He's great.
You were meant to be born in the 70s. Yeah. Or meant to grow up in the 70s. Clearly.
Yeah.
Wow. You really missed out, Tim.
I blew it.
That's all right. Fate blew it. All right.
Maybe in another life I was.
Yeah, maybe. It could happen. Who knows? Maybe no. All right, we're hopping in. You ready? Can I get a sound effect? Can I get a time travel sound effect? Ooh, I like that. That's like a cool like 50s like laser gun sound. All right, we are back in 76. Let's talk about some of the big events of 76.
Okay.
Or the ones that I found interesting. Apple Computer was founded by Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak in 76. We all knew where that would eventually head.
Yeah.
I'm holding
one of the products.
Yes.
Yeah.
In my hand. They would go on to like essentially realize a lot of what we saw in like science fiction movies, which is pretty awesome. The CN Tower in Ontario construction was finally completed. You never been? Ontario is pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Big fan.
Never been.
Yeah.
I should go.
Check it out.
Across the
sure.
border. It's right across the street.
Across the pond. Not across the pond. Across the river.
Across the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
across the river Styx. AKA the Detroit River. So, the CN Tower was the completed construction. At that time, it was one of the largest, if not the largest building. I believe it was the largest for a short while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, there were a lot of natural disasters in 1976. I mean, it seems like a staggering amount. There was a tidal wave in the Philippines that killed 5,000 people.
Yikes.
That's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. There was an earthquake in China, that killed 655,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
Over 500,000 people. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
I didn't ever hear, I don't know. In Guatemala and Honduras, an earthquake killed more than 22,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've got the first recorded Ebola outbreak.
Yeah.
In Sudan.
Pretty good year.
There's a lot of, biblical stuff going down this year, which we'll be getting into
later. You can see why certain biblical the movies were so popular around this time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So good for horror movies for just cashing in. The tragedies that surrounded them.
On the fears of, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty terrifying stuff. 76 marks the beginning of the end of apartheid, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
With the Soweto riots in South Africa. The U.S. turned 200. Happy birthday, U.S. in 76. Pretty
oh,
awesome.
The old bicentennial. I used to have a quarter.
Did you?
From the bicentennial.
I might have one laying around somewhere. It's probably like a drawer somewhere.
Yeah, bicentennial. It led to the big boxing match that year between Rocky and Apollo Creed.
Mm-hmm. It sure did. Absolutely. I think to celebrate that bicentennial, the $2 bill was created in 76.
Was it?
Which you can still see floating around out there.
Stupid.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I have a friend who is fascinated by $2 bills, collects them, and only busts them out in certain circumstances. You know this friend, Tim. So
I can probably guess.
Think about how some of the kooky people I know, and you might be able to figure it out. Yeah, he likes $2 bills.
I can see that. Yeah.
Fidel Castro becomes Cuban president.
Uh-oh.
Ruh-roh. Jimmy Carter is
elected. I got a Fidel Castro story, by the way.
Do you? Let me hear it right now.
When I was young, I went on a cruise to Jamaica. Went around the islands.
And Jamaica me crazy?
Jamaica me crazy. Down by the beach. And we were flying back, and on our way back, like, it was taking longer than it should have. And the pilot came across the intercom, mm-hmm. and he said, sorry, folks, we had to reroute our flight. We were flying over Cuban airspace, and they told us that if we continued on our course, they were going to shoot us down.
Oh, my God.
So we went around Cuba.
That's probably a good choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for the pilot for not, like, thinking he was in Top Gun or something and saying, calling his bluff.
And thanks for the warning, Cuba. Like, at least they warned you before they went and started shooting at you.
Right.
Sometimes Fidel just
that was in the, I think that was, just to put it in time, I think it was mid-90s, mid to late-90s.
Sure, so let's say 20 years later.
So we were still kind of, Cuba and U.S. were still kind of playing games.
There were some tensions going on there.
Yeah. It wasn't like it was, but yeah.
Yeah, it eased to a certain extent, but it certainly wasn't. I don't think everybody was all hunky-dory.
It's like it was like kind of like grumpy old men at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Like which one would Fidel be? Would it be
Matthau?
Yeah, for sure.
Matthau. And Clinton would definitely be Jack Lemmon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I like that.
Yeah. Clinton would score Anne Margaret too.
He would.
Yeah.
He might have. I don't know. And maybe Sophia Loren.
Yeah.
In the sequel. Speaking of presidents, Jimmy Carter was elected as the U.S. president this year.
That he was.
Yep.
He did not last long.
Nope.
Only a couple of years. Things would go south for old Jimmy. Very nice man. Probably a better post president than actual president.
He's really an interesting guy.
Yeah.
I think he's an interesting figure. Yeah, more than he ever was a president.
Had just learned this week. When he became president, he had to give up his peanut farm.
Oh.
His business. Yeah. That
That's
he
too bad.
Left the Marines for.
Does that mean Trump's gonna have to give up a steak farm?
I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news, but old Uncle Donnie ain't giving up anything.
Nope.
Don't worry. I don't know if you listened to the last half of this podcast last week. We were kind of worried, but no, we've come to our senses. We're all going to be rich here in a couple of years.
Yeah, we're going to be fine.
Yeah, we're going to be super rich. We don't have to do anything.
Nope.
So if you're listening to this out of the country, in a couple of years from now, guess what? We retired.
Yeah.
We're not even doing this anymore.
No.
We're so, so wealthy.
Yeah. We got some from the Donald stash. The Damned released the first punk rock single.
What was it?
New Rose.
Okay.
That was the name of the song. Big fan of The Damned. Love that old
Damned
school.
Is sweet.
Love that punk stuff.
This coming era of punk is like my favorite.
Oh, it's so good.
I like this era better than like 80s.
Yeah, I mean there's some good 80s stuff still too, but no, I like the really early that kind of that mid 70s, like when things were starting to kind of get going, yeah. The death penalty is ruled constitutionally acceptable at a Supreme Court. So there's that. Yeah. String theory was first postulated in 1976. Let's spend the next hour explaining string theory. What do you say?
Yeah, Wikipedia.
Yeah, let's do that.
String theory is a theory, like, it shows up. I read about it. I read about it a couple times. And, like, in the midst of it, I'm like, okay, it kind of makes sense, And then once I stop, I cannot tell you what it is.
You're like, what? What was that? Like, it literally wipes your, it's like, what's the thing in the Men in Black movies? They shine. The deneuralizer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And then finally, we're going to get into, since we're talking about movies, I think it's important to mention that the first use of Steadicam was in 76. Do you know what movie that was?
I do. It's Rocky.
Rocky.
Because you told me beforehand. And we're trying to figure out what shot it was in Rocky.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the first shot was.
You might be right. It might be the training montage. Or the Run Through the Streets.
Yeah, I'm thinking so.
Did I Google everybody right now? The route Rocky took in someone routed.
Oh, the route
where
Philly
he would have, yeah, around Philadelphia, and they're like, he would have ran like 50 miles.
Yeah, it was like completely unrealistic, right?
Yeah, because the shots they show in front of the landmarks, they're like, that's on the completely other side of the city.
I love that. That makes it even better. So, speaking of movies, let's talk about the big movies of 76.
Yeah,
before
let's
do we it. Get into our movies, let's talk about the big movies. Do you know what the number one movie of 76 was? The number one box office draw in 76 was?
Was it Star Wars?
It was not. Star Wars did not come out in 76.
When did it come out?
77, I believe.
Okay.
78.
Okay.
One of those two. Not 76.
77 sounds right.
Or it would be on this list.
Right.
Actually, it was the movie we were just talking about.
Rocky? I didn't know it was that big of a... I knew it did well. Yep. I knew it won the Oscar.
Number one. Let's talk about the top 10. We have Midway. That was number 10. Mm-hmm. The Enforcer, number 9, which was one of the Dirty Harry films.
The Dirty Harry movie, yeah.
Yep. I believe the second in the series. Silver Streak, number 8.
Ah.
Number 7 was King Kong with the Jeff Bridges.
Faye Dunaway. I kind of like that one.
Me too. Yeah.
There's nudity in that one.
There is?
Yeah. Kong rips open the top.
Yeah, he does.
Her top, yeah.
Yeah. No, Kong. In Search of Noah's Ark was number 6.
Never heard of that.
Nope. the Omen was number 5.
That was like... People want to see that to atone for going to see The Omen.
Yeah. And maybe Carrie and maybe Burnt Offerings. Yeah, seriously. The Omen was number 5, so the devil beat God in 76. All the President's Men was number 4.
I can see that.
A Star Is Born was number 3.
The Streisand movie?
Yes.
Oh, good.
And I think Chris Christopherson as well.
Yeah. Host of a horror movie yearbook. Both of us know the old Streisand Christopherson.
Hey, look, we are two men of refined taste.
Renaissance men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Will. Yeah.
And then number 2, just behind Rocky, was To Fly! !
What is that?
I don't know. It was produced by the National Air and Space Museum.
I'm going to look at it real quick. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Take a gander because I have no idea what it actually was.
We'll get to horror movies here in a second. I got to figure out what To Fly is. To Fly.
Yeah. Produced by the National Air.
It's an IMAX movie.
Oh, okay.
It's a documentary about the first hot air balloons.
That's neat.
All right. It was the highest grossing documentary of all time before the release of Fahrenheit 9/11.
Wow.
Two very similar movies.
It held on for a while. And let's talk about songs real quick.
Okay.
I think it's important to know what was going on in music at the time. Number 10 was A Fifth of Beethoven by Walter Murphy and the Big Apple Band.
Okay.
Number 9 was Love is Alive by Gary Wright. Number 8 was 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover by Paul Simon.
I don't like Paul Simon. I don't want to put that out there.
I like Call Me Al.
Do you call me Al?
Because it's so goofy.
Yeah.
That I have to like it. Other than that, I'm good.
Disturbed did Sounds of Silence better. Let's put that out there.
Oh, no. No. Love Machine by the Miracles. Kiss and Say Goodbye by the Manhattans.
Okay.
Number 6. Number 5 was Play That Funky Music by Wild Cherry. Mm-hmm. Number 4 was December 1963. Oh, What a Night by the Four Seasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, What a Night.
That had like a... That charted again in like the 90s, if I remember.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah. I think it was in a commercial for a while.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a remake either. It was just the same song.
So good. Good for you, Four Seasons.
You know what else did that recently?
Mm.
My Boo. Yeah.
My Boo.
At night. I think of you. They started playing it on the radio again.
That's so good. So weird. Disco Lady was number 3 by Johnny Taylor. Number 2 was Don't Go Breaking My Heart. Elton John and Kiki D.
Ah, oh, fantastic song.
Wonderful. And number 1 was Silly Love Songs by Wings. So
Travolta had a song on the Billboard's Top 100 this year, too.
Yeah, what was the name of that song? Do you remember?
I do not. We'll check it out.
It was, I can't remember. Him and Olivia both did pretty well for themselves.
Yeah.
For a while there.
Yeah.
I'm proud of them.
It was, I'm looking it up. Oh, Let Her In.
Let Her In, okay. Yep.
God, this picture of the YouTube John. Oh, John.
He's
we could have a whole podcast on all John Travolta.
He has not shown up in nearly enough horror films. I'm just going to throw it out there.
No.
He seems like a...
He's got the face for it now.
Oh, God. I've always been surprised that he hasn't taken more of a Nick Cage route where he'll literally do...
He's doing that.
Is
kind of. You haven't seen him much lately. I don't know if you've seen the picture for I Am Wraith or I Am Wrath.
No.
It looks like Killing Season. This is where he grew a silly beard.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember that. That was pretty cool.
He played a Russian, I believe.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I'll have to watch
that.
Yeah,
he's got Travolta goes through these phases, and then someone remembers that he's actually pretty good. Like, sooner or later, Tarantino will be like, hey, like, come be in my movie again.
Yeah, come back, please. Yeah, good for him. You know, I think we should get into it.
Let's do it.
Speaking of John Travolta.
Starting there?
He's one of our... Yeah, we're going to start with Carrie. Carrie, directed by Brian De Palma. Who we both like quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Let me give you the synopsis for those who may, for some reason, not know about Carrie. Carrie White, a shy, friendless teenage girl who is sheltered by her domineering religious mother, unleashes her telekinetic powers after being humiliated by her classmates at her senior prom. Pretty much the movie. Yep.
Yeah.
Tim, I want to hear what you have to say about Carrie first, but... Before we touch on that, I want to mention this, of course, was based off of Stephen King's first released, published novel.
Yes.
Of the same name. And I think we'd be remiss not to mention how huge Stephen King is for the genre of horror, both in film and in the world of novels and writing. And... this was kind of the first step in that direction, and there'd be good stuff later on, and there'd be bad stuff later on. But
I think this ranks up near the top.
I would agree.
Of film adaptations of Stephen King. Yeah.
Yep. And I want to mention Nancy, one of our longtime listeners. She had early on hoped that we were going to cover some King. So Nancy, this one's for you.
Yeah.
Tim, what did you think about Carrie this time around?
Oh, I like it a lot.
Good.
It's my favorite of the three movies. It is De Palma and Stephen King is a very cool combination of people. It's a very cool match.
Yep.
Because King is... I've read a decent amount of Stephen King, and I like him. King sometimes could use an editor. He gets very in-depth with certain things. He goes on tangents.
He does, yep.
I've not read Carrie, actually. I'm going to.
I have
once I finally get through the Dark Tower.
Right. I have read it once. Many moons ago. Yeah. Yeah.
And so but De Palma is a good match because De Palma is such a visual filmmaker and he's very bombastic. And I think they complement each other well. Because
sure.
King can get into his old Steven's not a fan of religion.
No, he's not.
And
nope.
I like De Palma because he's not subtle either. And De Palma will put that symbolism literally all over the movie.
it's dripping with it.
And it's to the point, and De Palma's so funny to me because it gets to the point in a lot of his movies where I think he's just being kind of funny a lot of times. Like, there's a shot of Carrie and her mother at the dinner table right before the prom, and there's a giant painting that I'm not sure anybody would have, but maybe insanely religious person would have, of the Last Supper.
Honestly, you know what's crazy is I think there's that probably exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just is a really funny shot.
It's amazing. Yeah.
And then the end, of course, is maybe a little on the nose too, where there's not even anything. We'll just start off with spoilers, probably. Carrie's mom is crucified by Carrie at the end, mm-hmm. and I don't think there's anything deeper other than the fact that it's ironic that this religious woman was crucified by her own daughter.
No, it's definitely it's right there, in front of you, and that is a change from the book. I should mention.
Is it? Yeah. What happens in the book?
Carrie does kill her mom in the book, but she stops her heart.
Okay.
Which I can understand the change. One, because like you said, De Palma likes to go there.
Yeah.
And two, because it's kind of hard to feel like even now it'd be hard to show you what's happening when that happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Visually, this is a much more satisfying end for that character.
Yes.
So.
Mm-hmm. He reminds me a lot. Well, De Palma's Scarface, mm-hmm. and he and Oliver Stone share some similarities.
Sure.
Yeah, they're a great match, too.
They are,
Get those two maniacs together.
Yeah, they don't play around.
No, I really, really liked this movie this time around. And it's funny because it's a funny movie to me because it's basically just teasing you and teasing you until the big prank comes.
It is.
It just heaps sympathy on Carrie for like an hour and 10 minutes, and the whole time he's so good at it, and he's so good at teasing it out, De Palma. That might be not be something Steven is very good at sometimes too, but so that might be why they compliment each other too. But he's so good at it, and by the end of the movie, when she's on her big date with the baseball player, I can't remember his name right now.
Is it Tommy? Right,
Tommy. Yeah, yeah. Tommy. You're they share some sweet moments, and you're like, oh my god.
He's an interesting character.
Yeah. And De Palma lets you know from the beginning what's going to happen to Carrie. Like, you know the entire time. Like, it's like fate. And
yep.
You know the entire time. But even during that scene, you're just like, maybe this will work out. Maybe, like,
yeah, you're gonna be okay.
Maybe they'll miss. And we'll have a happy ending in the Stephen King Brian De Palma movie. And you don't. And she loses it. And the third act is bonkers.
It's nuts.
And it's De Palma letting loose and doing split screens and all sorts of camera tricks. And it's really sad, but also really, really fun in its own way. Yeah. And it kind of toes that line. It reminds me a little bit of maybe even Drag Me to Hell in that way. It mm-hmm. reminds me. Those two are very similar in some ways. I think we'll get into a little deeper as we go on, but I want to hear from you now. I liked it quite a bit.
Yeah, me too. And I've always liked Carrie, the book and this adaptation of the book. It's interesting. I think I felt differently about it this time around watching it. It had been a few years for sure. I am not normally one to be bothered by the. I find oftentimes I watch movies with. We talked a little bit about this last time. Last episode, people that watch things and laugh at it because it's old.
Right.
Right? And they get bothered by, like, some of the older style of filmmaking, whether it be straight kind of edits that seem kind of out there now in today's, you know, cinematic world, special effects, things that they laugh at. I found myself being a little distracted by some of that in this time around, which is weird for me. I don't normally mm-hmm. get bothered by that. But once I got past that and I was like, come on, Willie. Like, some of the psycho music cues. Like when a pencil would move, I'm like, oh, lie. Come on.
Well, I think a lot of it too is it's been parodied so much over the years.
Sure.
And De Palma is such a the visual sense is so heightened that it's hard not to kind of roll your eyes sometimes.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the fun, but I also I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but you know what, once I kinda got over that and I realized that I was being, you know, not being fair. And that once I remembered I enjoyed this movie every other time I've watched it, I really got sucked into the story. And I think most of that for me has to do with the performances, particularly Sissy Spacek, who's incredible. Mm-hmm. This is her first film role, I believe ever. I think this is her big debut, certainly as a star, of a film. And, Piper Laurie, who plays, Margaret White, Carrie's mother. They're fantastic, yeah. And they have great chemistry. Their chemistry is screwed up, but it's great. And really, it's rounded out by some great performances. Nancy Allen's great. She's miserable. She's a miserable human being.
Her and Travolta are the worst couple.
They're terrible. Yeah. PJ Souls is pretty awful in this. Like, she's good, but she's just I just want to.
PJ Souls had an awesome career on this point. She did. She was in Stripes. She was in Rock and Roll High School. She was in Halloween.
Yep.
Yeah.
Lots of, like, kind of quintessential movies of that era.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for her.
She had, like, a coolest career.
She's so cool. Also, I love, real quick, Norma is her character. And I like how Norma's always wearing a baseball hat. That's kind of her thing. And I don't know if you noticed, but when she's getting her hair done for prom, the baseball hat's sitting on top of, like, the dome thing.
I didn't notice
over
that.
Her head. Yeah. No. So it's always on, even when she's in the, that's a fun little thing. I'm sure that was De Palma being a goof.
Yeah.
I
do want to touch on Travolta real quick.
Of course, yeah.
Because he is a weird asshole in this movie. He says stuff like, keep your tits on.
Yeah,
what does that even mean, John?
He's a creep. And the thing is, what's really sad, he's also a putz.
Yeah.
Because Nancy Allen's character in this, she's not your typical, like, I'm like a spoiled, snotty, popular girl who doesn't like Carrie because she got me in trouble. She is that.
Yeah.
But she's a sociopath.
No, she is.
She is. And she knows what she's doing the whole time.
She's like one of the women, if you've ever seen the show, Snapped.
Yes.
Where, like, a woman, like, is wronged by her boyfriend, or husband, and then she snaps and kills him. Yep. Like, that's Nancy Allen in this movie.
Yeah, there's a scene where she, particularly where she's toying with Travolta.
Yeah.
Like, she starts, like, kind of kissing on him and stuff, like, there something's going to happen, and then she, like, shoves him away, and, like, that whole relationship is scary to me. Like, they're scary people. They're unhinged.
That's interesting. That happens in another movie tonight, too.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so, no, this movie for me is really kind of buoyed by the performances. And I think the changes from the book are smart. I think they made the right calls in terms of what to leave out and what to alter, which is nice because oftentimes I go, why? Why'd they do that? I think everybody does that from time to time. I will say I find it interesting that all three of our films we're talking about tonight are based on books.
Yeah, I didn't realize Burnt Offering was. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. And I thought about it, and so far, not a single movie we've covered on this show is based on anything other than the script that was written for the movie.
Really?
Yeah. Kind of cool. So 76 is a big year, apparently, for like literary adaptations.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I do want to touch briefly, and I'm sure you've got a lot more to say about Carrie, so I want to kind of get out what I have here. My favorite part about Carrie is the fact that it's about strong-willed, tough women. Mm-hmm. Like, it's about legitimately strong female characters. They might be out of their minds, but they're still strong.
Right.
And they still stand up for their convictions, and they still, like, see it through the... Like Carrie's mom, okay... She's in a psycho. She's nuts. She's out of her mind, but she's strong. Like she's strong in her convictions, and only at the end do we really see her crumble and break. We finally see like kind of what's underneath the surface. But she's a strong female character, I think. Carrie's a strong female character in a lot of ways. She's kind of this wonderful revenge fantasy in a way. But she, like, I don't know, I like her because she really never changes. Like, she never changes who she is to fit what other people think of her. She just goes nuts at the end.
Well, we're in the 70s, and we're at the time of kind of the feminist movement.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, 1976. Yep. And there is probably there definitely is a feminist reading for this movie.
I think so.
If you want to look at it that way.
I think not only does it show a girl who's struggling to kind of find herself and her womanhood, because, I mean, the movie literally starts with her having her first period. Like, that's how the movie starts.
And the way it's shot, I want to bring up the way it's shot, too, the opening credits, because it's like a fan,
it's like a softcore porn movie.
It's like a Porky's. It's like a male fantasy of what it's like, and they should be, like, hitting each other with pillows at this point.
They almost are.
Yeah, they're all naked, and they're all in the shower, and then all of a sudden, and the way he shoots Sissy Spacek in the shower is very much, very steamy.
It's very erotic. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it's pretty much interrupted by the reality of this girl becoming a woman. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting.
And I think it's probably smart on De Palma's part from a money-making perspective, because this is not necessarily the easy horror movie to sell to a male audience, I don't think. Especially back then, I think this is an easier sell maybe for a female audience. You've got a female protagonist, and like you said, we're in a time where feminism is you know, like it's making headway here, mm-hmm. and a lot of people don't like that. And I think you suck in all the boyfriends that were taken to this movie with that opening scene. Practically, I from a practical standpoint, I think it's smart from De Palma to, like, because you know every teenage boy in that audience is like, oh my god, girl, you know, yeah. I mean, I would have been too, you know. Yeah. But then, like you said, you get slapped with reality very quickly.
Yeah, and all the males are really uncomfortable when dealing with this kind of stuff. There's a shot, it's a really funny shot of the principal when the one teacher comes in and she's got Carrie's period blood on her shorts. And the principal looks at it like it is the most disgusting thing he's ever seen. And you sit there like, oh, this guy's a wife, he's a daughter. Like, he'd never seen this before, but it makes him so uncomfortable.
He's more disgusted by the idea of a period mm-hmm. than he is about what it was done to Carrie.
Exactly.
Anyway, what I find really, really fun is that Carrie only happened because of a strong female. Tabby King, Stephen King's wife, is the only reason this book was ever published. She actually, he threw it out and she found it in the trash, like his work thus far. And she said, this is like really good. And she helped him finish the book mm-hmm. and she helped bring a female perspective to the novel. And King has been, and sometimes rightfully so, and I think he would say this too, has been sometimes criticized for his portrayal of females, in his books, but it's hard to argue that Carrie White's a very interesting female character. That seems like a fully, you know, three-dimensional, you know, character who has some growth and some change.
There is a great quote. It's in a Playboy interview with Stephen King, and I wish I had it on me now that you think about it, but it's what makes Stephen King so cool. His, like, the interviewer asked him, I think the interview was a woman, and he asked him about that. He's like, yeah, I don't write very good female.
He admitted it.
He's
yeah.
like, I don't write very good black characters either. Like, I'm just, it's a weakness of mine. I try to get better at it, but
I'm not, that's not my strong suit.
And I think that's really cool.
Good for him. Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of feminism, I want to say a couple things real quick. So in 76, we have the National Organization for Women establishes a task force for battered women and household violence. This is a big deal at the time. This is not a thing that happened. Like now, there's a lot of support systems out there, I feel like, for this,
yeah.
for those types of scenarios. But back then, I think that's really kind of a landmark. there's also a lot of stuff going on with Planned Parenthood. There's a lot of court cases going on at the time. Planned Parenthood versus Danforth. The Supreme Court struck down a requirement that required spousal consent before a woman could get an abortion. So go Supreme Court in this case. We've got, I don't know.
Interesting year for the Supreme Court.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, there's some oddballs there. But yeah, there's a lot going on in the movement in general, and I think that De Palma might have been responding to some of that with this film, and I think King was responding to some of that with the book. So
yep.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and I think that's I think it adds another layer to Carrie that maybe for those of you who have seen it a billion times, you know, maybe watch it from that angle, you know. Might add something new. Anyway, yeah, Tim.
No, I just want to talk about with just a couple things real quick. I want to get back on the religion thing, as how it pertains to the feminist reading of this movie, because there is the idea in this movie of religion kind of repressing womanhood, and like her mom hits her and then like screams like, "You're a woman now," and then like she even says Eve was weak. I mean, there's a lot of that in there. It's weird. Carrie is there's a lot of repression in this movie, and you can almost read, if you want, the final explosion of Carrie and all that as her kind of embracing womanhood and like taking control, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah, it's for some reason, it's this, to me, it's this weird like allegory for the female orgasm.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's ridiculous, but it's like, no, but it, like, to me, that's how I like Carrie's making it happen. She's I mean that though.
Right.
It sounds silly, and I know that I probably sound ridiculous right now, but like that, I don't know. There's a lot of power going on there, and yeah.
And it's interesting because all three of the movies we're going to talk about tonight kind of deal with repression in different ways. This one definitely does.
Mm-hmm.
Burnt Offerings, there's a lot of it going through that.
Yep.
And The Omen is all about repressing a child. But it's weird because King has stated in recent interviews, there have been a lot of people drawing parallels to school shootings with Carrie.
Yeah.
And he didn't have that in mind when he wrote it.
Sure.
And he's even said, like, he feels sorry for Carrie as a character, but he doesn't really like her, necessarily. And I kind of see what he's saying there. She's because of her upbringing and the way she was brought up, I see what you're saying with a strong character, but I think she's kind of weak-minded in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And I don't know if she's ever going to be, if that person would ever be that fully formed because of the way she was treated by her mother.
Sure.
And I think one of the more devastating parts of the movie is it's almost like sometimes there's like men or women, like men are like, oh my God, I'm becoming my father. Mm-hmm. Or women are like, oh my God, I'm becoming my mother. Well, she's after the pig's blood thing, it's really devastating because her mother turns out to be right. Like she's going to become her mother because she takes out all her rage on everybody else. And she doesn't focus on the people that wronged her. She
no.
just takes it
she
out
kills
on everybody.
The teacher.
Yeah.
Who was actually
trying
very
to help
kind
her.
To her.
Yeah. So there is that to it too. I see what you're saying and I think it can be read that way, but I don't know. I see what King is saying to her. He says, I mostly just feel sorry for Carrie.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think you're wrong about that. I mean, you know, strong might not be the right word for it.
Right.
You know, I think that she's, I think that she's a character that's always on the cusp of becoming her own person. And then, and I think she shows a lot of strength, mm-hmm. especially when pre-prom, when she's finally saying, I'm going, you know, I'm like, I'm done with this. And it does take other people to help her get there, but who doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, who doesn't need a helping hand from time to time, or somebody just to push you in the right direction. But no, she does inevitably kind of succumb to her own comfort zone, which is crying to mommy and begging for forgiveness kind of situation. So
lashing out at everybody else. Yeah, it's a tragedy in a way. Yeah,
it might be the image of Carrie that's stronger than the character herself. Maybe the image of that classic image of her on the stage, the flames around her. She's covered covered in blood from head to toe, and she's got this look in her eyes like there's nothing left in there but just anger. And I kind of dig that.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that like feminist groups weren't like using that as like a like an awesome like picture of Sissy Spacek covered in blood, like don't fuck with us kind of thing.
This
you know?
I'm a woman, hear me roar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll screw up your prom real quick. All right. So, you know, Carrie is not a light film. And neither is our second film. So I want to lighten things up for a second. Because I don't want to bum everybody out.
No, 76 is a bummer enough.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. So let's. I don't think we've ever talked about this together, Tim. So I'm excited about this, and I'm excited for people to chime in, hopefully, and talk to us about some of their favorite moments. But I want to hear about some of your favorite moments as a horror fan.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, you know, it could be an experience in the theater, something you saw in the theater. And the experience will always stick with you. Maybe there was something going on there. It could be somewhere you've been, you know, maybe you've been to a film location. It could be somebody you've met, you know, that involved in horror films. Whatever experiences that you've had, you know, as a horror fan that really kind of reaffirm why you are one, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Anything off the top of your head that you got?
I can talk about my early theater experiences.
Sure.
I went and saw Scream 2 in the theater. With a buddy of mine, and it may have been one of the first times that I've interacted or been around like an entire audience, because it was like opening weekend, and the entire audience was so psyched for Scream 2.
And rightfully so.
Yeah. I had seen Scream 1 on, like, I had to get a note to go see Scream 2. I was still that young. My parent had to write me a note, but it was, the audience was in it from the beginning, and everybody in that theater was cheering for Dewey to live. And there are a lot of fake outs of that movie. There's a big fake out, isn't there? It's been a while since I've screened.
So there's the scene. It's actually, it's a really, the thing about the Scream series that I think people forget about is that, especially the first two, is there's some really powerfully like emotional moments in those movies.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest one for me was Scream 2. And it's the one you're talking about where Dewey is separated by a pane of glass.
Yep.
Between him and Gal Weathers. And he stabbed like on the other side.
Crowd.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Tell me about the crowd.
The crowd like gasped and like there was anger. And then Dewey shows up at the end, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's the same thing as the first movie where he lines up on the stretcher at the end.
Yeah, yeah. And the crowd erupted.
Yeah.
Like they started clapping.
Yep.
And I remember thinking like, wow, this is so much fun.
Yeah.
Right now. And I mean, what's funny in Scream 2 is average.
Yeah.
I think Scream 2 is average.
It's
not even, I don't think it's even close to as good as the first one.
No, the first one is, nothing is as close is close to the first one. But the second one, I think, is a solid slasher sequel.
It's above average. Yeah, yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. No, I'm just convincing myself to hold it higher.
I feel weirdly similar about Scream 2 as I do about Halloween 2.
Fair enough.
So.
Yep.
I don't know what that means, but.
No, I know exactly.
I know what it means
I
to
know
me.
Exactly
okay,
what you're
cool,
saying.
Cool, cool.
So. That's one of the first ones I can think of off the top of my head. I've got another one, but I'll let you go next.
Yeah, so that's a couple of my favorite moments being a horror fan involve meeting people in the industry that I've always been a fan of. I love meeting like awesome like horror movie actors and stuff. Like we've been to a couple horror conventions together and we always have fun at those. But it's almost more fun to meet somebody outside of that, to meet somebody like just randomly on the street. And that does not happen a lot when you live in Michigan. Like it's not like you're just walking around, and it's not like living in LA where there's a chance that you're going to bump into somebody at some point. Right.
Ted Raimi lives right next to right next door.
Oh, does he live?
He lives in Royal Oak.
Oh, that's
Ted.
Oh yeah. He lives in Royal Oak.
I've heard people say they've seen Ted Raimi at the Royal Oak.
Ted Raimi roaming. Ted Raimi. That's awesome. But you know, it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
I was on a trip to Minneapolis, Minnesota. I was there for a video game tournament that my wife was competing in. For those who maybe have seen the game Big Buck Hunter, it's a bar game where you have a plastic gun and you hunt deer. And there is a tournament for this game. Anyway, we were in Minneapolis, and I'm at the Mall of America, because you got to go to the Mall of America, right? And I'm walking around, and I had stopped for a second to, I think I something fell out of my bag, and I went to grab it. And I look up, my wife's farther ahead of me now, she kept going. And I look up, and there's Tom Atkins. He's walking towards me, and I, oh my God, what? And I like double took, because, you know, he's Tom Atkins. And I that was one of the coolest things, because I just remember going, I like dropped my bag and pointed at him, and I went, Tom Atkins? And he's just like, yeah, that's me. You know, like, he's super friendly. He, like, took a picture with me, like, super nice, asked us what we were doing in Minneapolis, wanted to know about the video game tournament. Like, just really sweet guy. That was, like, one of the coolest moments ever. Like, that made me really excited.
Yeah.
Like, this, like, not many people in the world are going to walk around and go, like, instantly go, oh, that's Tom Atkins. You know what I mean? So it was really cool.
That is awesome.
And then it's funny, because afterwards my wife goes, like, because she had walked back over when she saw I was with somebody, and she looked really confused, right? And I was like, honey, this is Tom Atkins. And she's like looking at me like, I don't know who that is. And I'm like, honey, Creepshow. We just watched Creepshow a couple of days ago. She's like, oh, you're the mean dad. And she said to him. And then afterwards she goes, I really thought that was Stan Lee at first. It was really funny. She goes, I really thought that was, like, I thought you bumped into Stan Lee. I could kind of, I could get it. You know what I mean? But it was just really, it was really funny. Yeah, it was good. So I made her watch Night of the Creeps afterwards.
Good, yeah. Good. Did you? I could only imagine if she didn't know, like, if she, like, the whole time in Night of the Creeps, she's like, is that a young Stan Lee?
That'd be so good. I didn't know Stan Lee was an actor. What? So good. Anyway, so that's one of my all-time favorites, is that moment.
I have another quick theater one.
Sure.
Real quick.
Let's hear it.
I went to a showing of, because this just popped in my head and it made me laugh. I went to a showing of Lords of Salem.
Oh,
in Dearborn.
Boy.
And it was me and two other people. And Lords of Salem is a very slow burn. And at the end, it kind of explodes into just a lot of weird, demonic, crazy imagery. And like, there's like a mutilated, like, little person baby combination,
oh,
at one point. And the couple, two rows in front of me, with like 10 minutes of them, we just got up and left. And it was just me in the theater, and I laughed. Like, I was just laughing to myself as I laughed, because it was so funny to me. But, and this might end up, and you were there for this, would be my favorite, like, horror. It was the John Carpenter concert that we went to a couple
of
years ago.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
There was a moment during that concert. We went and saw John Carpenter here in Detroit at the Masonic Temple, which might be the coolest possible venue for John Carpenter.
No, it is. It's like at least old, in Detroit, yeah, certainly.
It's like an old, rundown, like, building.
It looks very gothic.
Very gothic, yeah.
Very cathedral, kind of, yeah.
And it was so cool, and we watched Escape from New York, which Willie and I discussed. This would not have been our pick. We would have picked They Live, I think, is what
it would have been
about.
They Live or Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Those are better crowd movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Escape from New York.
Everybody was just hissing at the screen. Snake, yeah, was on the screen. They kept going,
and like, cheering for Snake, and I'm not necessarily sure Snake is a character, like, you root for all the time.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick. Yeah, I like him.
I like Snake, too. But, yeah, well, you know what? We might need some snakes.
We might.
Yeah. But then John Carpenter took the stage, and he had kind of a giant, like, three or four screens behind,
yeah,
him,
yeah,
that which he would play the themes from his movies, and they would show clips from the movies behind him. And there was a part during The Thing where I went, this is the most amazing concert I've ever been to, because it's just John Carpenter playing the song from The Thing and just random insane images of gore from The Thing happening behind him. And I was just sitting here like, this is so fucking cool.
It was so cool.
And then he ended with In the Mouth of Madness, and that was really cool too, because like, you felt like you had just watched, like,
yeah,
a horror movie. Like, you felt kind of like icky and gross, mm-hmm, inside it. In the Mouth of Madness sent you back out into the world, and then he came back on for an encore and played Christine.
Oh.
And he said, like, drive home safe. Yeah, so yeah, that was up there for sure.
That, yeah, that was, that's an all-time great. My wife was there for that too, and she cried during the Halloween theme. It was so funny. It was my favorite. It was so sweet. Real quick, I got another one. I just recently was able to... I think we'll talk about more of this kind of stuff later on at some point.
Oh, definitely.
It'd be fun to talk about some more. But just recently, I was able to hold the bong thermos from Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is kind of fun. So I have a picture with that, and I'm holding it like, hey, yeah, the actual one. So that was a fun little experience. I like, anytime I get to touch a prop, you know, I feel good about it. So cheap thrills. All right, well, I think our next film on the docket is another real doozy here.
Yeah.
Things are about to get even darker on the show.
Another pick me up.
Yeah, so let's get into it. All right, Tim, we're talking about The Omen. That's our second movie of the night.
We're about to, yeah.
Yeah. Directed by Richard Donner.
Richard Donner, the king. I love Richard Donner.
Yeah, I like Richard Donner quite a bit. Two directors I like quite a bit. The synopsis for The Omen is an interesting one. Mysterious deaths surround an American ambassador. Could the child that he is raising actually be the Antichrist? The devil's own son? That's the synopsis. I dig it. Spoiler alert. The son is the Antichrist.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of a boring movie if you found out that was not the case. So The Omen, this is a movie that I've seen, 4 or 5 times in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Considered a genre classic, I would say. Certainly a staple of, it pops up in conversation if you're talking about horror movies.
Right.
You know, it's bound to pop up in conversation at some point, and for good reason. And I will say, upon this viewing, I really liked The Omen, like even more than I realized I liked The Omen. Like, I really liked this movie, Tim.
Yeah.
And like my feelings alone after watching The Omen, alone are enough reason for me to feel good about the fact that we're doing this show. my reevaluation of this movie. I always liked it. But I never liked it like I do right now. Like, I immediately was like, I want to watch the sequels.
What was it, do you think?
The kind of the globetrotting adventure of it that I did not remember.
Yeah.
Kind of the buddy film that it turns into with Gregory Peck and, I feel horrible right now.
David Warren?
Yeah.
Yep.
When it becomes like their adventure together, I'm like, oh my God, I'm in love with this movie. Like, these two guys, they're going to figure it out together.
Right.
And of course, sadly, he gets decapitated. And then Gregory Peck is shot and killed.
He gets decapitated in one of the best decapitation scenes I've ever seen.
One of the great decapitation scenes. And I think the other aspect I loved about this movie is it's a kind of classic evil child movie. I mean, I think this is before a lot of that became a thing.
Mm-hmm.
There were certainly evil kid movies before this, and certainly movies about like, the God and the devil and
right.
that level of evil,
especially around this time period.
Sure.
Quite a few. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This came after The Exorcist. And
right. Exactly. Yeah. And this is probably the best of the, I don't want to call it Exorcist ripoffs, but because it's not a ripoff of the Exorcist, totally different movie. This is the best of the kind of responses to the success of that movie.
Yeah.
I love, though, that this movie is beyond that. This movie is it's on a huge scale, certainly compared to, like, The Exorcist. Like, the scale is huge in this one.
Yeah.
This is the fate of the world.
I know.
Like, but it's still so intimate and so focused on this small group of characters. The threat's huge, but the movie never loses sight of the fact that this is about a family. And a family falling apart because of what's going on with their adopted son. I feel like this movie is a huge response to what was going on at the time in terms of the aforementioned natural disasters that we were seeing in the 70s, mid-70s. We had an energy crisis going on at the time. As a response to that, we had a big environmental movement at the time. The country was very cynical, and a lot of that has to do with, as we said, the post-Vietnam issues. We were seeing inflation, like all-time high inflations.
Yeah, the hippie movement had kind of died out by this point.
It started to, it started to die out. We had some major kind of post-Watergate investigations into the FBI, the CIA, the government in general. We had the seeds being planted for what would become kind of the Reagan Revolution
mm-hmm.
of the 80s.
Yeah, and you could almost see some of that in the sequels.
Sure.
You want to look at that.
Sure.
They look at it that way. Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there's a kind of a reclaiming of power when it comes to the conservative.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting. I think we see a lot of that here. And that coupled with kind of the fun, like I said, globetrotting adventure, made me fall in love with this movie like I never had before.
Yeah.
And it gets Gregory Peck.
Yeah, he's so sweet.
He's amazing.
Yeah. Just to jump in real quick.
Yeah, that's
what I like about this movie, and I like it quite a bit, is there is, because it's Donner, Dick Donner and Gregory Peck, there is an air of class brought to it by those
two. It's so classy, dude.
Yeah. Superman, the movie, there's an air of class brought to it by Donner that maybe sometimes these movies you don't see very often.
That's funny. That's that you
especially at that time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
With superhero movies. Yeah. In particular.
Absolutely. And that's one of the, that's funny that you mentioned class in particular, because this is a classy production.
It is.
It's a classic Hollywood, like, just, I don't know. It has just such an air of, like, a weird air of sophistication about it. And I love that, that even The Exorcist didn't have.
Right.
The Exorcist was dirty.
Yeah.
It was very Friedkin.
Yes.
This is very Donner. And I love that. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I think one of my big takeaways from this viewing is this is the kind of movie that if it was made today, and it has been remade in 06.
I've never seen the remake.
I have. It's not bad.
Uh-huh.
Liev Schreiber is pretty good. All the performances are fine, but it's kind of a straight remake. Like, there's really not much changed that I can remember. I mean, it's been a long time since I saw it, but I think some of the deaths are switched around a little bit.
Okay.
They go a little more over the top than...
They keep in the, it's all for you, Damien.
That stays in. I'm sure it's more grotesque than this one. Mm-hmm. Although this one...
This one's pretty grotesque.
She smashes that window and bounces off of it, and it's
the
really...
The death scenes are a lot stronger than I remember.
Yeah. But they're very effective.
Yes.
And somehow they're still... This movie is still classy. But... It's not as it pales in comparison to this one.
Yeah, I interrupted you before you got your point. I'm sorry.
No, gosh, no, you're right. I really loved reevaluating this movie. I think it's got a lot to say. I want to talk a little bit about the Omen Curse. I want you to talk a little bit about your overall feelings on the movie. I know you were, but what I do, when I, we'll make sure we get into the Omen Curse afterwards, because I really want to read off some of these facts to you.
Okay.
I want to terrify you. So in the words of Stephen King, what was that silly Maximum Overdrive promo he did?
Okay.
I want to scare the hell out of you. And he's all coked out. If you have a chance, please look that up on YouTube. Totally unrelated, but check it out. There's a Maximum Overdrive trailer with Stephen King, and he's really scary.
Oh my God.
Yeah. He's scarier than anything in the movie.
Yeah.
You love the score of this movie.
Jerry Goldsmith. First of all, Jerry Goldsmith is like my favorite composer of all time. He has done Star Trek. He has done The Gremlins. He did Rambo. I'm just listing off. And like, you can probably hum all of those scores. Alien. All of this, Planet of the Apes. Jerry Goldsmith is sweet. And this score is so freaking cool. I mean... chant is just like chanting.
The choir, huh? Dude. Huh? That choir.
It's so good. It's so bombastic and just ballsy. And in a year when Rocky was released, wait, did he do this? No, that was somebody else. No, that was not Jerry Goldsmith. Sorry. But in a year when Rocky was released, it's this. Rocky's the second best score to me, and it's. It's so close, but they're both so good.
What's amazing is the Omen score is the polar opposite of the Rocky score.
Right.
Like, the Rocky score is like, it's like if so, like
they both have choirs, though.
They do.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's one choir singing because they just saw God.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there's one choir singing because they just watched Lucifer fall from the heavens. Like you can, like, I don't know. There's so much emotion.
Right.
Behind this score.
You pretty much nailed it. As far as why I like this movie, because I do like it. I like this movie because of the cynicalness of the 70s, especially around this time. Because I find I find a lot of the stuff with Gregory Peck's character in this movie really fascinating, and it's still relevant today. Weirdly, there's some anti-abortion stuff in this, I think, too. And yeah. I think that's really interesting. He has a line in there. He was like, it was foretold that this pregnancy would be terminated. I'm going to fight to see that it's not. So he's kind of like fighting fate. And that's a really interesting line around this time.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I'm with you. When you place it in the context of the time, it's just, you listed off those things in 1976. And if I'm sitting there, it's just so, humankind is so fascinating to me. Because if I was sitting in the theater watching The Omen at this time, I'm like, oh my God, we're like, I'm going to die right now.
We're all
going
to die.
We're all going to die. Like, and I find it's so much fun to me. Religious horror is so much fun to me. Because there is some scary shit mm-hmm. in religion. And you sit there and you think about it and you go, what if it's all true? and like, you're like, what if this all happens? And yeah. you think about how awful that would be. And the omen takes advantage of that.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of it's suggested, but a lot of it, the way it's shot, we talked about when they're globe hopping over to the cemetery. That scene is just really evocative and kind of creepy. And
oh, I love it.
Moody.
The dogs and everything.
The monkeys. Yeah. The woman hanging herself. Like, there's so many just great
The priest moments. Pierced through the... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Ugh.
And Damien's such a creep.
He is.
Yeah. What's her name would win all the time? The orphan.
Mm.
The orphan in a head-to-head matchup.
If they were throwing down?
Take hand-to-hand. But Owen's got those powers.
Well, he's got the devil on his side, man.
Right. Yeah, and... The orphan is just Russian.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's probably
Putin versus the devil.
It's probably even as you can
in
get
like
it.
A boxing match. Yeah, no, it's one thing I do want to mention real quick about this storyline wise. We've talked a lot in movies we've covered in the past in regards to bad decisions made by our characters that wind up leading them. We talked about it with Drag Me to Hell, certainly. Mm-hmm. Gregory Peck makes a big mistake.
Yeah.
In the opening minutes of this movie. Don't lie to your wife about something like this, like a white lie, like, "Hey, did you eat the last slice of pizza?" No, I don't know. No. Like, that's one thing.
His Italian wife.
No, I don't know. The pizza pie. Well, we are in. I mean, we're in Rome, so this is
excellent point.
Yeah, I'm just getting into character here. But that might be one thing. But
right.
when your child dies, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, a horrible, horrible thing. When a child dies, don't, like, do the old switcheroo. Like, regardless, let's take the devil thing out of this completely. It's not cool.
Right.
I know he had good intentions, but the road to hell, literally, in this film, was paved in good intentions. It's not good.
Yeah.
Don't do it, Gregory. It's not as skeevy as Peter Sarsgaard. Don't get me wrong. Gregory is not nearly as skeevy. Because Peter Sarsgaard is skeevy. It's not a great choice, though.
No.
Like, I could see Peter
Nothing
Sarsgaard
Nothing in this movie is
this.
As skeevy as
no,
The Orphan.
No. Can I talk about The Omen Curse?
Let's get into it. I've got nothing else on this movie. I really liked it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, please see it.
I listened to the commentary.
Yeah.
Don't really... It's not the best. There are a couple funny
Who's
moments.
On the commentary track?
Stuart Baird, who would go on to direct a couple Bond movies. I believe he directed Tomorrow Never Dies.
Mm.
And Richard Donner.
Cool.
And they're both fun. They're both funny. It's mostly them just complaining about close-ups in modern movies. Which is weird. There is an awkward moment, though. And I wanted to bring this up where Stuart Baird is about to just trash The Haunting remake by Jan de Bont. And Richard Donner jumps in and he's like, I'm actually working on a picture with Jan de Bont right now. So let's steer clear.
Oh my goodness!
It's so funny.
That does not sound like a very good commentary.
No, but they're good together. Other than that moment, see the sequels if you haven't. I think 2 is an absolute blast. It's got an elevator scene in it that I have sent to Willie on many occasions. And 3 has one of the greatest shots of all time, which is Sam Neill surrounded by a pack of dogs. And that could be a wallpaper for your house, I think.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have a mural painted on the side of a van.
Right. Right. So, because Sam Neill is the Antichrist now, and he's like the president.
Mm-hmm.
So,
It's got dogs hanging out with him.
Just a pack of dogs. Yeah.
Well, you know, one has to wonder if maybe the commentary was a little less informative because they were avoiding talking about the horrible things that happened.
Right.
Maybe they were worried if they talked about it, it would start happening again. Let's talk about this. This is pretty bad stuff. We'll start with John Richardson, okay? John Richardson was the special effects consultant, okay? And he was in charge of a lot of the death scenes in the movie, including, of course, the decapitation. His next movie was A Bridge Too Far, okay? And when he was working on that film, he was in a car accident. And his girlfriend lost her life in a car accident. It happened on Friday the 13th.
Yikes.
Also, when Richardson awoke from being knocked unconscious, the first thing he saw was Amen 66.6, which stands for Amen Netherlands, kilometer 66.6.
Cool.
The accident had some strange coincidences with the decapitation scene in the movie. And I don't want to make light of somebody's actual death. I'm not trying to. These are just things that actually happened. The young lady was cut in half, much like the decapitation that occurred in the movie.
What?
Yes. Which might I remind you, her boyfriend came up with that effect.
Yeah.
Gregory Peck was not immune to the Selman curse. He had accepted the role, and shortly after, his son shot himself.
I think I knew that.
And with no, there was no. Supposedly, there was no warning or anything.
Yeah,
I can think that. He did wind up, of course, coming to shoot the film in England. But on his plane trip over to England, his plane was struck by lightning. The engine caught fire and then nearly crashed and died.
Like how apparently, like God doesn't, like when you do these things, like God doesn't like completely wipe you out. He just starts taking out people around you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Fucks with you.
You're not the only one. Well, that's kind of what happens in this movie too. Right. Three days later, the screenwriter of The Omen, David Seltzer, also on a flight to England, which was also struck by lightning. shortly afterwards, executive producer Mace Newfield was on a plane.
Mace Newfield? That's a sweet name.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Was in a plane and was also struck by lightning.
Should we stop talking about this movie? Are we going to be struck by lightning?
Probably. So that's now three planes.
Struck by
lightning.
Separate
planes on separate days. And that's not all, though. Producer Harvey Bernard was visiting Rome, and he was nearly struck by a bolt of lightning.
Have you ever seen The Simpsons where Homer just walks around stepping on rakes? And he just keeps going, don't!
Yep.
That's what
that
this
feels like, what's
me.
Happening here?
Yeah.
The production. They rented a plane to shoot some aerial shots of London.
Yeah. Well, where is this going?
After all this. there was a kind of a switch with the rental company, and the plane that was going to be used in production went to a group of Japanese businessmen.
Always a bad choice.
The plane that the Japanese businessmen were in hit a car and killed everyone in the car and the Japanese businessmen.
Yeah, you don't ever hand over any belongings to Japanese businessmen, from what I've seen.
They get into some trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, I'm surprised that plane didn't end up at a strip club.
It might have been. It hit a car, so it had like to be close to the ground.
Like a strip club / karaoke joint, which
yeah.
is what I
yeah,
assume
like
all of Japan is.
Yeah. On the first day of shooting, many of the crew members were in a head-on car crash. They all survived. But people started to feel that things were kind of getting weird by this point.
Yeah, they're
starting
to get the hint.
there's a scene, of course, where Gregory Peck is attacked by a group of Rottweilers. And they were supposed to attack the stuntman who had the padding that you would expect of such a stunt scene. However, things got crazy, and they started biting through the padding and would not back down despite the fact that the trainer, who's worked with them their whole lives, was trying to get them to stop.
Mm-hmm.
he almost died. He was almost ripped apart by his own dogs. That being said, a man was ripped apart.
the way you put that.
A man was ripped apart by a tiger on the set of the
Of course. Why? Yeah.
In the zoo scene, there were supposed to be tigers. It hit the cutting room floor because the footage was a dude getting eaten by a tiger. So
right,
that's not good. and sadly, it was a zookeeper that worked at the zoo that was killed by the Even he couldn't escape this curse.
This might be more deaths than those natural disasters you listed off early.
Yeah, and there's more, and I'm not going to go through all of it. There's even more. It goes on and on and on. There are things that actually happened during the remake too.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Nothing during the sequels?
I don't see anything about the sequels. No, but Pete Postlewaite's brother passed away just as soon as he started filming. Then the night before, his brother who passed away had drawn 3 sixes in a poker game and mentioned it to Pete Postlewaite on the phone. Like, that's kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
And then he wound up dying.
Then he was struck by lightning.
Probably. Yeah. Or eaten by a tiger. While being struck by lightning. Oh, and then a plane full of Japanese businessmen ran into him. It was a really mean way to go out. Anyway, So
if you're listening and you...
Stop tweeting things and putting things on Facebook.
Or if you're listening and you're thinking, like, man, like, it was a sweet Black Friday, like, idea Tim had. I'm not going to steal it, but I want to get into screenwriting. Don't write anything related to The Omen.
Don't do it. Do not do it. So, I think it's time to jump into our last movie.
Yeah, we're jumping in, much like a pool.
Yeah, which, Tim, before I even break down the synopsis of this one, I want to say your brief, we usually have like 5 or 6 word reviews to each other about these before we like get into them on the show, and Tim's was like, I liked it, and I'm paraphrasing here, I liked it, it was mostly Oliver Reed cleaning a pool. And honestly, like, who wouldn't like that, right?
If it was, yeah. So. I mean, it's a 2-hour movie, and the first hour of it was mostly pool maintenance.
Yeah.
Because he's cleaning it, he's got some sort of machine that he's in.
Yep, he swims in it for a while.
Swims in it for a while, he tries to drown somebody.
Tries to have sex in it.
Tries to have sex.
He does a lot in that pool.
Yeah, I don't see how thematically the pool ties in. Maybe I'm just adult.
Maybe they're all just trying to, keep up with the...
Water is kind of seen as, like, a gateway between worlds.
Sure.
So, maybe this pool... this pool has some sort of properties that we don't know about.
Oh, my goodness. this film, of course, Burnt Offerings. Mm-hmm. This was directed by Dan Curtis, who I believe is the creator of the classic... vampire romance soap opera Dark Shadows.
Oh, Dark Shadows. Yeah.
And also directed a Trilogy of Terror.
My dad loves Dark Shadows.
Yeah, my mom was a big fan. The synopsis for Burnt Offering says, a family moves into an old haunted house that regenerates itself by feeding off the life forces of its injured occupants. I think. Kind of, right?
Yeah.
I didn't catch the injury thing. But.
No. I mean, that's implied.
Yeah. So, Burnt Offerings is just a quick little background for me on the movie. Then I want to hear your thoughts about Oliver Reed's pool adventures. this was a movie, like many, that I always, for whatever reason, I always took my dad's word on movies growing up.
Uh-huh.
Like, if he said, like, you got to see this movie. Like, I think I mentioned before The Howling was one. Oh, you got to see that. Like, I was always happy with it, right? So I never hesitated. Now, my mom, on the other hand, I hesitated sometimes. Because, like, she's a big Officer and a Gentleman fan.
Right.
And I'm not a big fan. It's okay. But, like, as a kid, like, that's not what I want to watch.
No.
So I was always more hesitant. Now, I remember my mom saying, you have to see Burnt Offerings. And I think she denied me renting, like Day of the Dead for the thousandth time. I was like, no, you're going to rent something new, and you're going to try Burnt Offerings. And I remember really enjoying this as a kid, which is crazy to me because it's not terribly exciting for most of the movie. But I remember being really freaked out by it
right.
and compelled by the spookiness of it.
This isn't a bad kids horror movie, I don't think, because it's not like overly graphic at times. It's kind of spooky. And
yeah, it gets a little, there's a little bit of sexuality, but pretty brief.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know there's no actual nudity, really.
Oliver Reed grabs a handful at one point.
Yeah.
He really
goes,
he takes advantage of that scene.
Yeah, he sure does. Poor Karen Black. Anyway, so that's my background with this movie, is I remember seeing it back then, and I had not seen it since. But that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this one, because I'm like, this is a perfect one to revisit. And I will say, overall, I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
Tim, how'd you feel about Burnt Offerings?
This, when I said this is the closest, I said I liked it in the text. I'm thinking about, this is the closest I have been to not liking a movie on this podcast. And it's not that I dislike it. I like it. I'm like halfway right now.
Yeah.
But I'm leaning up because I like, the ending's great. I had problems paying attention to it.
Sure.
Slow burn can either work really well for me or not at all. Ty West is a current filmmaker who does a lot of slow burn horror, and I'm not the biggest Ty West fan, but I think I've softened on him over the years. And I think even that softening on slow burn horror led to actually kind of liking this one, because it's got that 70s pacing.
Mm-hmm.
I told it, it, there's a lot of, I made the joke about it, but the pool main, but it's very slow and it builds tension.
Yeah, I think you're tense most of the movie.
Most of the movie, but there are parts where I'm not tense.
You're like, all right, come on.
I'm like, all right, yeah, you've done it. All the leaves are gone from that.
Yeah,
pool.
Sure.
It's also like the haziest movie I've ever seen in my life. Like, for whatever reason, like, the only movies that can top it are like the last five Clint Eastwood movies he's directed, or it looks like he's shooting through fog. Or
yeah, no, I get that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's just a lot of haze. But I like the movie overall. Yeah. Oliver Reed is awesome.
He's always
great. Like the coolest. Yeah. Karen Black is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Betty
Davis is cool.
Betty Davis is cool. Burgess Meredith shows up.
Mm-hmm.
The chauffeur.
Oh boy.
Yeah, let's dig into that, because I think the chauffeur is the best part of this movie.
He is.
Maybe other than the ending.
The ending is.
Yeah. Is the chauffeur ever explained?
Yes, kind of. Okay. I think with all this, you have to do kind of your own digging,
right?
Mental digging a little bit with some of the stuff in this movie, and if you're into it enough, you'll do it. Mm-hmm. If you aren't, maybe you will. I don't know, but I think you have to dig a little bit. The chauffeur was, and I can tell you the true story behind the chauffeur, actually.
Oh, cool.
Not from the book. Cool. Added by the director, Dan Curtis. The chauffeur was the gentleman who was picking up the people to, including Alvarita's young boy, to go attend his mother's funeral. And from the vibe I got, his mother didn't die well. His mother died very similar to how Betty Davis's character dies in this, where she's in a lot of pain.
Right.
And so I think that's a haunting moment for Oliver Reed's character, is this
a haunting
this chauffeur.
Moment?
Nice. Nice. This chauffeur that's picking him up as a young child to take him to the funeral of his mother. A devastating moment, I'm sure, in this young man's life. And he grins creepily at the little boy. This happened to the director.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, so this is kind of, we had a director, we had a story like this a couple weeks ago. Oh, Wes Craven.
Yeah.
I don't know if you told that on here, but the way.
But yeah, no, but this,
Freddy Krueger and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This is based on a life experience of, and he said that the chauffeur always stuck with him. That visual of this guy kind of creepily smiling at him, like, not like a smile, like a comforting thing, like trying to, like, hey, kid, how's it going? Like, I'm glad your mom's dead smile.
Right.
And he said this happened to him, and he always wanted to find a way to kind of.
Yeah, who is that real chauffeur driver, I hope?
It's terrifying.
Yeah, I hope he got fired.
Right.
I hope he lost his job.
Right. And the scene of the chauffeur in this, where he finally breaks in the door, is insane.
Yeah.
And really creepy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't really know
what's
going on.
There are some very creepy parts, and it does build really well to the final reveal.
And I think the one thing that I really like about this one is the concept of a house. We've seen plenty of I think, haunting films before and since, where there's the idea of the house is alive. The house is haunted. You know, it's not just a ghost, but the house has its own consciousness, you know?
Yeah.
The Shining Hotel.
The Shining, you could even throw Amityville in there. I think the Sentinel? Isn't that kind of?
Yep.
Yep.
But that a place is so very haunted that it's even the Beyond.
Right.
You could argue that. That it's beyond just a spirit or an entity, which we have in this movie too. But I love the visual of the house repairing itself.
Yeah.
It's so creepy.
And I think
like it's shedding its skin.
Yeah, and I think there's some interesting stuff to read in here by whoever wrote it or directed it. Because we're past that like 1960s hippies era. And now people are starting to grow up. And when you grow up, sometimes you get a house. And what you don't realize is that a house is constant. Or like mm-hmm. having a house can sometimes probably, it can suck.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a money pit a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. It can be a drain, and it feels like, and that maybe going into, and it's weird that, and it's funny that all those movies came out around this time, post hippie era, where we're starting to get into that, and it's a drain, and it's a drain on your personality. In this movie, it's a drain on their sex life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a drain on money, so...
It's a drain on their parenting?
Yep, on their parenting, and you can continue to fix it and continue to fix it, and you just have to keep doing it. It just keeps regenerating. You still have to just fix more stuff. Like, it never ends sometimes.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, once again, we're on the cusp of that Reagan revolution.
Right.
And the 80s, which is a decade that we're starting to edge into by, you know, obviously by 76... we're not far out from 81, really, which is a year we've already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like a totally different
universe
to me, which is insane. That's only 5 years apart. But that just shows you how quickly things change.
I wonder how it's going to feel like.
Five years from now?
Yeah, 5 years from now. Or like even if we go back and watch a movie from like from 2014 compared to 2009, how much different it is. That's fascinating.
No, absolutely. But we're edging into, and a couple of years later, I think George Romero would even heavier hit on this idea of consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
The Karen Black's character in this movie is obsessed with things.
Yeah.
She's obsessed with pretty things. There's probably too many moments in this movie where something is dirtied or broken, and she gets like overly upset about it and is more concerned about the stuff than about her own kid. And obviously in this film, it's she's kind of being possessed in a way, and that's the reasoning behind it. But I think there's something there. I think there's some foresight here, and I don't know how much of that stems from the book because I have not read the book. I'm sure that probably shares some of that stuff there. But that it's ahead of its time was what I'm trying to say in terms of kind of pegging that consumerism and that attitude of your possessions being more important than the people in your life. So.
Yeah.
There's some stuff going on there.
There is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Karen Black's transformation at the end?
Yep.
It's awesome.
It is awesome.
She really freaks me out, actually.
She does.
Like, I was by myself last night watching it.
Yeah.
I didn't finish until, like, 11:30 last night.
Yeah.
And, like, when I went, like, to bed, I was kind of, like, freaked out a little bit. Because her face is creepy. It is
really creepy.
Yeah. And then, of course, Oliver Reed getting launched out the window.
That is a great face plant into the car.
It's brutal. And his son sees it.
Yeah, I know.
That's the meanest part. It's like the last moments of this young boy's life before he's crushed by a chimney are his father's face squirting blood out of. It's horrible.
This 1976 is so mean.
Mm-hmm. It pulls no punches. Yeah. We realized in 76 that the world is a cruel, harsh place sometimes. And we embrace that.
40 years later, baby.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing. So, yeah, that's what's depressing about this podcast sometimes.
Sometimes you realize that the more things change, the more they stay the same.
All of this has happened before. All of this has happened again, I believe, is the quote from Battlestar Galactica.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, no, I enjoyed this. I think if you're willing to... I don't want to say endure, because that's too harsh a criticism. It really is. Because I enjoyed this movie overall, and I don't regret watching it. And there's a good chance I'll see it again at some point.
Prepare yourself for 70s pacing, I'll call it.
Yeah. So don't, you know...
Or older style of movie.
Be prepared that you're not going to be riveted the entire time. You're not going to be on the edge of your seat the whole time.
Sometimes you got to meet a movie halfway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the payoff, I think, is worth the investment.
I do, too.
Yeah. So... Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I know a lot of people, and you are one of them, but I know a lot of people that really, really like this movie.
Yeah.
And I totally can see
you get it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Absolutely. And you said that in the past about movies like House of the Devil, too.
Yeah.
Because you and I have always kind of disagreed on that one.
Yes.
But you've always understood, like, why.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. It's just, it's not my cup of tea.
It's not your thing.
No.
Right. So anyway, check it out. If you're, you know, if you can deal with that, definitely check it out. I think that wraps it up for 76.
That was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
nice trip back.
Nice trip back
to the
down.
End of the world.
Yeah, right, to the apocalypse. First things first, let's talk about feedback. We've mentioned this a couple times, but really it is important to us, and I think it's great for you guys, too. We're on Facebook. Horror Movie Yearbook. Twitter, we're at HM Yearbook, so tweet us. Our website is horrormovieyearbook.com. We are on iTunes. You can find us by searching for Horror Movie Yearbook. Please leave us a rating and review. That helps us gain more visibility on iTunes and hopefully get more listeners and get more feedback and be able to kind of, you know, spread the word a little bit and get out there. Once again, thanks to John Morrell for our music. You're awesome. You're a rock star. Yeah. Be sure to check out his show. He hosted a show on the Midwest Podcast Network. It's the Midwest Game Nerds. If you're a fan of video games, I don't know who out there is a big video gamer, but if you're a fan of video games, tell them you want to, you know, tweet at those guys at the Midwest Game Nerds and let them know that maybe you want like a Horror Movie Yearbook Midwest Game Nerds crossover episode sometime. Like we can review, we can talk about like horror video games with those guys or something. That'd be fun. I think we need to at least announce the year for our next episode, right, Tim?
Let's do it.
And how are we doing this?
I have got a website pulled up called the random.org.
Random.org?
It's a random number generator.
Cool. So this is how we're going to pick our next year. This is crazy. I'm scared. I'm excited.
And I just hit it. Random number generator. It's going to be in the 80s or 90s. I just want to give that.
Do we put that in there then?
From the min is 80, the max is 99.
Yeah, because we haven't done an 80s or a 90s film
in a while. So we're going to go back to it. I just hit the generate button, and I'm really excited.
What year?
1994.
What? Okay.
This, I'm looking at some of these movies right now. I want to name them off real quick. I don't know what we're going to do yet.
Okay.
It's going to be 1994, and I'm really excited. Right
okay,
now.
All right.
Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Okay.
Brain Scan. In the Mouth of Madness. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Cemetery Man. Phantasm 3, Interview with a Vampire. Whoa. Now we're getting ugly here. Night of the Demons 2, Pumpkinhead 2, Stephen King's The Stand, Wolf. Ugh, we ain't doing Wolf.
Wolf.
The Crow, baby, The Crow. Puppet Master 5. Shrunken Heads.
Oh, man.
Leprechaun 2, Watchers 3, Witchcraft 6.
Holy crap.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The New Beginning.
Oh, no.
Bloodlust Subspecies 3.
Okay.
So it's probably going to be one of the first ones
this
we named off.
What a weird year we just got.
We got a very weird year.
Okay.
At first I thought this was going to be my year because I told Willie, but I think it's the next year. I told Willie I want to do 1995 as the year. I want to give the people a little preview. But I want to do all urban horror. Mm. Like Vampire in Brooklyn and like Tales from the Hood came out that year.
One day we're going to get there.
We're going to get there. But this isn't nice.
So 94 is our year. Okay, well, you heard it here first. We heard it here first.
Yeah.
94 will be our next episode. So tune in then. And until then, we will be out there.
Yeah, write us in if you want us to review any of those movies I named off.
Yeah, if there's a specific one from 94, let us know. Yeah, please don't make us review Subspecies 12.
Yeah, I ain't reviewing that. I ain't reviewing Puppet Master 5 either.
I'd rather not. I mean, I will, but I'd rather
not. Yeah, I probably would too.
So, anyway, thanks for listening, guys, and, you know, stay safe out there.
Yeah, be nice to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's learn from the mistakes of these characters in these movies.
Yeah.
All right. Have a great night.
Bye.
Or day.